Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
It is the perfect time to talk to Mike McGlinchey with all concerns about tackles happening from Joe Staley's injury. Obviously, Mike, it's great to have you on today. Before we get to backup tackles, what it's like to play tackle in this league. Let's start with the real big game this weekend. Notre Dame, Georgia. I mean, come on. This is a big one. Number 3 versus number 7. Are you ready?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been ready for this rematch for 2 years now. So I'm excited to watch our boys get after it and go down between the hedges and hopefully can pull out a victory.
Are you declaring revenge? Will there be revenge?
If they win there, it'll be a pretty sweet one. Yeah, absolutely. They can avenge the crap that the starting left tackle at the time did to end the game last time.
Oh, yeah? Would you like to say anything more about that?
Yeah, well, that was probably my biggest scar in football I ever had. And I gave up a little strip sack to end the game against Georgia last time we played them. And hopefully, my boys that are still on the team can help me feel a little bit better about that one.
How exactly do you get ready to watch a game? I mean, your snacks are limited by the fact that you don't want to eat bad food the day before an actual game.
It's a lot of hard work.
So what exactly is involved here? I mean, other than plumping pillows and making sure there's tea.
Well, yeah, I'll be watching the game before our night meeting. So I'll probably just sit there and be watching all my O-line teammates that I used to play with and see how they've developed and how they're doing. And they got a big task ahead of them against the Georgia front seven. They're always very, very good. And they're showing no signs of slowing down this year.
Do you have a grotto or any candles which to light in maybe the bathroom if you don't have a grotto?
I have plenty of Notre Dame rosaries. I have plenty of Notre Dame memorabilia I'll probably take a knee and say a prayer right before my play like a champion today sign before the game. So I have plenty of stuff I'll bring the good mojo for the Irish.
That's how you get ready, Ray.
Will you touch the sign?
Absolutely.
Of course.
I have it sitting right by my front door.
Mike McGlinchey here on 95.7 The Game. Mike, it's always good to talk to you. We had a pleasure talking to you last year. You joined us a couple of times. It was so much fun, and we really appreciate that. Now you guys are playing the kind of football that leaves you with some fun football to talk about after the games. Congratulations on the 2-0 start. What do you think is working best so far through two very good weeks of football?
Well, I think that the cool thing about what we've done so far is that we've won two games in wildly different fashions. I think the first week our defense showed up and played lights out all day. You know, was resilient from start to finish, and the offense got plays made when we needed to make plays. And then last week, obviously, we were kind of hitting on all cylinders offensively, other than a drive that we stalled on. And it was a kind of a good road win there. But the two things that have been consistent with our football team is the mindset and the way and how physical we've been playing. And I think that we keep continuing to clean up execution and not have any of those stalling drives or anything like that, and continue to play with the mindset and physicality that we've been doing. Good things are going to keep happening for the Niners.
Let's talk about Staley's injury. Obviously, it's something that everyone's concerned about. He has been a huge mentor to you. Where is he, and then where is your team in his absence?
So Joe's obviously a great teammate, and he's been in the facility every day since. He's helping Justin and I still get ready like he always does. And, he's in great spirits. I think I'm so excited, want to get him back, obviously, but it's a good opportunity for Justin to rise to the occasion here coming up this weekend. But Joe has been awesome. His spirits have been so high, even though it's been a crappy situation for us and for him personally. It was a freak play that broke his leg there, and that's just the way football goes sometimes. But he's been an amazing teammate these last 4 or 5 days, bringing in positivity, even when, you know, he's probably feeling a little hurt on the inside.
You've talked a lot about Staley's mentorship, both for you, and we heard sound bites from you at practice today talking about what he did for Justin School. What does that actually involve? I mean, does he see things you guys don't pick up on the field? Like, what kind of stuff does he help you with?
It's just kind of puts you at ease a little bit, just to have somebody talking to you that's been there and done that and has done it for as long as he has. It's not necessarily X's and O's. He'll obviously ask you a question or answer your question if you have a question on X's and O's and football stuff, but it's about a mindset. It's about a way to play. It's about how to approach the game. It's about how to prepare. It's about, you know, just being a pro in all aspects of your life. And Joe has done that with me, you know, since the day I got here. And, you know, he's been doing that with Justin since Sunday.
I think this may be a stupid question, but I'm going to give it a go anyway. So strap in.
Okay.
When you see as many quarterbacks go down around the league in the first couple of weeks, how do you sort of adapt your thinking to, oh, my God, my job is to make sure that doesn't happen to my guy? Is there any sort of material thing that has to happen in your head when you see that sort of thing happen again and again so early in the year?
No, it doesn't change anything about what I do. Obviously, those are very, very unfortunate situations for the teams that they've happened to. And, you know, my job is my job, and I'm a prideful guy, and I take a lot of pride in being the guy that doesn't let our team down. And, you know, it's not a mindset of, man, I got to keep Jimmy right or I got to keep Jimmy up because everybody else is going down. It's, no, I got to do my job for my team, for myself, and to be the best that I can possibly be. And by doing that and taking care of my job first, it in turn keeps Jimmy upright. You can't think about that kind of a thing or else you're going to get bogged down with a lot of bad stuff in your head while you're trying to play good football.
So it was a stupid question.
Not necessarily. I mean, that's obviously something to think about.
Well, here's my stupid question.
All right.
Is there a difference between right tackle and left tackle in the modern NFL? Used to be the left tackle was the glamour position. Right tackle was the inferior player. And I don't see that being even close to the rule anymore. You got pass rushers coming from both sides.
No, there is no difference other than body mechanics and the label that's put on the left tackle position. I think Kyle hit it on the head when he talked about it earlier this week. You know, there's movies named after the left side. There's, you know, there's things that have been held to a higher standard because of the way football was, you know, 20, 25 years ago. But in today's NFL, it doesn't matter what side I answered this when I got drafted. There's no difference to me on either side of the ball other than, you know, how your body moves from sitting in a left-handed stance to a right-handed stance. And, you know, so I saw, you know, 4 to 5 of the best rushers in the NFL all last year, and I play right tackle. And, you know, if I didn't do my job, we would have had long days against those guys. But you just block out all the noise of people that say stupid stuff like that about, oh, you know, that was the dig on me, is that, oh, he's probably nothing more than a right tackle. Well, you know, right tackles are a pretty premier position in the NFL these days. So, no, there's no difference at all other than the label that people who don't understand football put on it.
Mike, to get through the Joe Staley injury, was there any discussion about moving you, if only for the fact that Justin School is more comfortable at right tackle than left tackle? Were you approached about moving at all?
No, I was not.
Well, then there you go.
Yeah.
Very straightforward.
So Justin's played both positions for us since he showed up here. I'm pretty sure he started his last 2 or 3 years at Vanderbilt on the left side. So we're going to be okay with Justin at left tackle.
I want to ask you about the other side of the ball. And obviously you're not playing next to these guys. I assume you see them in practice. But big improvement in the pass rush. And I'm just wondering, from what you've seen, what makes D. Ford and Nick Bosa special, and maybe what makes them different from each other?
Well, D, they are very different rushers. D has that, you know, he's very, very gifted athletically and has a motor that doesn't quit. And his first step and the way that he uses his speed to get different types of rushes into you. He can be physical off of his speed. He can get around your edge really easily, and he can bring it back inside on the stop of a dime. And for Nick, you know, he's got incredible football instincts. He's obviously strong, gifted physically, has the breeding factory that the Bosa family has become. It's cool to watch, and he doesn't quit on rushes either. Nick makes his living on beating guys on his first, second, and third moves, all in a combination, and that's what's really hard about stopping him. And the two of them are great teammates and great competitors, and that's why they're so good on top of all the gifts that they've been given.
When you were drafted here, Kyle Shanahan had made a reputation as a guy who likes to put the ball in the air because he's so creative designing pass plays. And yet the last couple of weeks, probably due to necessity, you've run the ball a lot more. So with that as background, what's been more fun for you, a lot of run blocking or a lot of pass blocking?
Well, actually, I think Kyle's foundation has always been the run game. Kyle takes a lot of pride in the way he's able to scheme up defenses and put our O-line and running backs and outside blockers in positions to succeed. He can see a front and know how to attack it based off of what he's seeing in front of him, and his play calls reflect that. Our pass game doesn't work without our run game, and Kyle's made that explicitly clear since I've been here as a Niner, and it's the only thing that we, you know, keep trying to improve on. And we utilize play action, I think, just as good as about anybody in the NFL. We utilize you know, our run game, because we like to stay ahead of the chains, and that's what we were able to do against Cincinnati. And we're going to have success more when we're running the ball and staying in front of the chains and being able to set up our play action and our pass game through that. And the more that we get into drop back protection and behind the chains, the less success we're probably going to have.
49er tackle Mike McGlinchey here, Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. So George Kittle, a prolific record-setting pass-catching tight end, how good of a blocker is he?
I think that's one of George's most valuable assets to our team. I think his willingness and his effort to do that and block hard and set edges and block an open space, I mean, the things that we've been asking George to do, you know, are pretty impressive. And everybody, you know, you want to talk about George's numbers dropping in his receptions or his yards or whatever the hell everybody's saying. George is one of the most, if not the most valuable player on our offense because of his, you know, versatility and willingness to be a selfless teammate and throw his body on the line day in and day out for us. And George is our workhorse, and our offense goes as he goes. And he's just so fun to watch as a teammate. For his selflessness to be able to do that, because there's not many tight ends in the league that'll do that anymore.
Is there a little part of you as a tackle that says in your head, yeah, man, that this is what it's like doing the stuff where you don't get any credit and not catching 10 passes a week. This is what I go through every week.
No, because George knows that. George is that's how George is wired. He doesn't need to be reminded of that. You know, he's, like I said, he's a selfless teammate. He's a selfless football player. George is just as excited when everybody else is having success as much as when he has success. And that's the cool part about being a close friend of George and a great teammate of George's. And, you know, that's why he's, you know, a top 20 player in the NFL, is because of the way he plays both run and pass, and how good he is at both of them.
I know Kyle Shanahan's been establishing a professional culture that is supposed to define this team beyond the wins and losses, but it's tough to establish culture without really winning. How much different does 2-0 feel this year than any other week last year?
I mean, it feels great. It always feels great to win, but you can't worry about how it feels to win for too long. We enjoy it for a day. And then we get back to work. We're not satisfied. We're not anywhere close of where we think we can go. I think this team still has a lot of goals to reach and walls to break down. And we're going to continue to work for that. And we got a great Pittsburgh Steelers football team coming in here this weekend that's hungry and ready to win. And there's a lot of pride in that organization, from the owners to the head coach to the players. And you know, they're not going to come in here all scared because we're 2-0 all of a sudden. We have to still earn it, and we have to go out every single day and make sure that we're working to be 3-0 just as though, because we all remember those times when we were, you know, 2-10 and 4-12 and whatever the hell the season finished at last year. We remember all those times, and we don't ever want to be back there again. So it's nice to enjoy the wins for 24 hours, but it's back to work as soon as Tuesday's over.
You mentioned the Steelers, and obviously that's the opponent. One of the biggest things to worry about, especially with the quarterback hurt, is they have a couple of nasty guys coming off the edge in Watt and Dupree. How much does your job as a tackle change based on who the guy is across from you? Like, you mentioned body mechanics switching left to right, but do your body mechanics or strategies change based on how you scout the guy across from you?
No, and I think that's one thing that I struggled with last year is that I worried too much about who was across from me instead of myself. I think O-line is a beautiful position because everything, I believe, is in your control. Rushers are working off of you, unless you get a couple of freakazoids that'll just run you the hell over. But for the most part, rushers work off of what offensive tackles give them. And the more that I take away from them, the better that I'm going to be. And that's just owning my own craft as I keep going forward. And when I'm studying rushers, you just kind of put them into categories, whether they're speed, whether they're power, whether they're both, you know, and combat a plan with my coaches to of how we're going to do it for the week. And each one's different, but, I don't change how I prepare, for specific players. I try to put each one in a specific category and use my mental reps and the things that I've learned along the way of how to block those specific types of rushers in my plan of attack for the week.
Mike, if you don't change the way you block against your opponent, do you have to change the way you block depending on who's playing quarterback behind you?
No. And that's the beauty about who we have here. It happened last year when Jimmy, Nick, and CJ all got chances to play. It's pretty seamless, and Kyle likes it that way, and we have two backup quarterbacks that are always extremely prepared and ready to go when their time's called, and it doesn't change at all other than whose voice is behind you on the cadence.
With all respect to CJ and Nick, do you feel sexier when you're blocking for Jimmy Garoppolo?
I don't know if I feel sexier, but I'm sure he feels pretty sexy when he's throwing for 3 touchdowns and 300 yards in a single game. So,
no doubt. Now, is he going to crack you off a pair of Jordans? He's like, he has access to the entire line now, does he not?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what his deal is there, but I don't know. I'd take a pair if he wants to throw a couple my way.
Absolutely. Do it.
Not for the old line, then for who?
Exactly.
That's a selfless man there. I will take free shoes.
There you go. Since nobody actually buys music anymore, we're going to ask you and all your Niner teammates this year, Mike, what is the last song you punched up on Spotify?
Ooh. This morning I was listening to a little Creedence Clearwater Revival, and Fortunate Son was the ride in this morning.
Very solid choice.
I like it. I like it an awful lot, and a lot of people do not know this. Creedence Clearwater Revival is a Bay Area band.
Alameda, baby.
That's awesome. I did not know that. That's a good little fun fact.
There you go. I hope you enjoy it. Use it in good health. Hey, enjoy a Notre Dame win, hopefully against Georgia. Have no more flashbacks to a missed block in that game. I wish you success, and boy, do we wish you success against the Steelers coming up this Sunday. What kind of an atmosphere do you guys want at Levi's Stadium?
It's our first time being 2-0 in a long time, and we've been kind of waiting for this moment for Levi's to show up and show out, and we'd love it for it to be a sold-out crowd and ready to go and loud and proud and get the faithful going. So, we're hoping that our success thus far has, materialized throughout the Bay Area, and people are ready to jump on board the Niners bandwagon.
I tell you what, Mike. Phenomenal interview. It was a pleasure talking to you twice last year, and this was so much fun. We might ask to do it twice this year. Thank you very much for joining us.
Anytime, guys. Thanks very much.
Mike McGlinchey, Niner right tackle, never even approached him about moving to the left side. So there you go. That's how Kyle Shanahan and company evaluate that position. Never even brought it up.
I got to say two things. First of all, I was told probably for the first time 20 years ago or so, if you're looking for someone to talk to on a football team, you go to the offensive line. and that has never disappointed, and it didn't disappoint today. Also, apologies, Elena was right in my ear. It's El Cerrito, not Alameda.
Yeah, I was about to say, because Alameda never sounded right to me.
I don't know why I thought Fogarty was from Alameda, but I did, and I was wrong. Shame. Yeah,
they all went to Portola Junior High.
I'm not surprised they didn't ask him to switch to answer the original question because of what both Kyle Shanahan and what he just said to us and what you've been saying, Damon, which is they got good pass rushers on both sides now. There's no one spot that's going to have the bigger job, and Mike McGlinchey is a really good right tackle, so keep him there.
But there is one thing that makes left tackle still more valuable in the fact that and it is that most quarterbacks are right-handed, so it is protecting the blind side. Because you hit a quarterback from behind, there's a better chance of him getting hurt because you're not prepared for it. So the left tackle will always be at least marginally more important because of that.
Unless you got a left-handed quarterback. I mean, was right tackle more important for the 49ers when Steve Young was the quarterback?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's why Harris Barton was the right tackle.
There you go.
Art Shell was the right tackle for Kenny Stabler.
Charlie Batch knows a little something about good blocking happening in front of him. A two-time Super Bowl champion. He spent, like, forever backing up Ben Roethlisberger. And obviously, Ben Roethlisberger's backup is going to define how this season and this year looks for the Steelers, starting with this week at Levi's Stadium. Charlie Batch is now a Steelers pregame analyst, and he's going to be joining us next year on 95.7 The Game. But thanks again to Mike McGlinchey for joining us. He is really good, man. I'll go one step further. Give me an offensive lineman from Notre Dame. Like, that's pretty much guaranteed to be a if you're going to screw up that interview, your questions probably suck.
I'm not going to argue with you, but I'm also not going to give Notre Dame credit for anything.
It's not just the benefit of the doubt. It's not. But those Notre Dame boys, like often Stanford boys, come with more vocabulary words than the next guy.
I refuse to agree to that on the air.
And they on the air, but you know I'm right.
I refuse to say it out loud.
You know I'm right.
I refuse.
But it's not vocabulary to make you a good interview.
By the way, anyone who went to Notre Dame is insisting that I'm right, and that's a problem with you to begin
with. Exactly. That's exactly why I'm angry at you. Notre Dame.
It's a good school, but you ruined it yourself.
By the way, I could have promised you that he had a play like a champion today sign, because every person
who
went to Notre Dame has one of those in their house.
I don't think that's healthy. That's cultish.
No, it's bad.
That's good. It's good.
Boo Notre Dame.
Look, I'll just say this.
How many pairs of candy stripe pants do you have in your house?
How many do you think I have?
Two.
If it's anything more than zero, you should be hospitalized.
The over-under is 1.5, right?
Take the over. There's two pair. The old gods and the new.
If I didn't know you were married, I would definitely assume that you were going to die alone.
Yeah, well, you know, that's still out there. Let's be honest.
Well, all right, I'll keep a good thought.
But, dude, McGlinchey's just the guy. And I got to tell you, as someone who wants to be the first to tell you that Notre Dame is no big deal and you don't have a fancy, shiny, hiney because you went there in South Bend, downgrade, it sucks, the girls there, ugly, blah, 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 blah. All that stuff, I want to say it. I can't even tell you how magical game day is in South Bend. It is absolutely royal. It's royalty. It's football royalty. It is amazing. The play like a champion today sign is super. It's special. It's cool. The grotto, the touchdown Jesus. Like, you can be as cynical as you want. The minute you step in there, if you can poo-poo it while it's actually happening, you shouldn't work in sports. It's just that simple. You shouldn't work in sport. There's a lot I hate about Purdue, but I'll admit there's a couple things they do right. Not a lot. But a few things. By the way,
Raheem Mostert, one thing they did right.
Do you realize that it was Raheem Mostert who broke Joe Staley's leg?
Well.
So leave it to a Boilermaker to do that.
Oh, jeez.
But Mackey Arena is a great place to go watch a game. I hate him. I want to beat him. Lose everything. It's a great place to watch a game. Notre Dame is a very special place on game day. The play like a championship sign. It's cool. Come on, man. You wish your college you went to had tradition like that. You're just jealous.
Let's move on. Charlie Batch is coming up next year. Charlie Batch.
You've ruined the day.
No, I get romantic about stuff in sports. There's nothing wrong with the 888-957-9570. Charlie Batch is around the corner. We're looking forward to saying hello to him. More of your calls. We got plenty still coming up here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Tradition.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome, welcome. It is really good to have you here. Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. You know, some stations have great call letters, certainly in Pittsburgh. KDKA, great call letters, even when it's applied to a TV station. Charlie Batch now does a little work for Steelers Radio Network. He is a two-time Super Bowl champ. He backed up Ben Roethlisberger for a very, very long time, knows the team inside and out, and he's very, very... We're very happy to welcome him here to the show. All guests appearing on the Dialpad guest line, Charlie Batch, former Steelers quarterback and now Steeler pregame analyst here with Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Charlie, thank you very much for joining us. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Very well, thank you. So Big Ben goes down. Did you ever think that that would be the week where they added Minkah Fitzpatrick? One move doesn't seem to correlate with the other. I'm kind of impressed.
Yeah, well, we're kind of shocked around here. So, you know, of course, you know, nobody wants to see anybody go down with an injury. So the way that Ben Roethlisberger went down, and it was just, you know, wear and tear, and eventually that elbow gave out on him. But I thought Mason Rudolph went and really played well when he actually had to get into the game. Outside of the drop by Dante Moncrief that led to the interception, I thought he played fairly well in the game. But when you add on the flip side, when I say I'm kind of shocked on the other side as far as adding Fitzpatrick, nobody saw that coming. That wasn't necessarily talked about a lot around here, only because a first rounder was mentioned, and that's something around here Pittsburgh has never parted ways with their first round pick.
Charlie, we'll get to know Mason Rudolph through you in just a little bit, but we have to start with Ben Roethlisberger, who, you know, people have passionate opinions about him positively and negatively for all sorts of different reasons. He was your teammate for a long time. What do you want to tell us about who Ben Roethlisberger really is, either as a player, as a person, as someone you shared a locker room with for years?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I know him as well as anybody, and he's a phenomenal person. I think he worked hard at his craft and you know, at a younger age, and we were predominantly run team, played great defense. As we know, the stats was always ranked at the top on our defensive side of the ball, but he never was getting the recognition outside of Pittsburgh, and he really worked hard at understanding that playbook and really owning that this offense. And, you know, here we are now, you know, 56,000 yards passing, you know, so it's impressive to see where he's at. And he didn't really get the credit until he really threw for 4,900 yards a couple of years ago that people outside of Pittsburgh started giving him credit to say he could throw the football.
You mentioned that the Steelers gave up a first-rounder to get Minkah Fitzpatrick. Is there some sort of shift in the way they view the way they do business as a result of that? Or is that just a circumstances dictate that they break their own rule for a change?
Yeah, I think it was circumstance. Obviously, they broke their own rule. But I think it was I know it was a need around here, because on the defensive side of the ball, they talked about was being a lot more polished in the pass defense. They were getting a lot of sacks, but they weren't getting the turnovers that come with it. So they focused on that, and up until this point, it didn't lead, or the numbers weren't where they wanted them to be. Shoulder injury to Sean Davis, which led to him being put on injured reserve on Tuesday, and ultimately that led with the trade with the Dolphins, because they needed somebody in that back end to help perform just because of the uncertainty with Sean Davis. And we'll hopefully see if all of this can pan out.
Watching a lot of NFC and West Coast football, quite honestly, I have not seen much Minkah Fitzpatrick. Just how good is this kid?
To be honest with you, I haven't saw much of him either. I started looking at him when the trade happened, and that was late Monday night when it occurred over here around Pittsburgh. So, you know, just based off everything that you heard of him coming out of Alabama, they know he can play. He really has really good size. I was at the practice today watching him perform, and he's just trying to get caught up to speed, trying to learn the defense and trying to see how much he can absorb. At least from the coach's perspective, they want to see what he could absorb and how much, and that will determine how much he'll be on the field this week. But like you heard Mike Tomlin talk about it on Tuesday, they plan on playing him.
The pride of Eastern Michigan, Charlie Batch here on 95.7 The Game. So Schadenfreude is a great word that the Germans use to describe joy in others' misery. This is where I need to ask you about Antonio Brown. When Antonio Brown left Pittsburgh, obviously it was a rare mutiny that a player had on a franchise that has represented stability. What'd you think of him then? What'd you think of him when he got to Oakland? What'd you think of the way he worked his way out of Oakland?
Yeah, well, I only know Antonio was one way, and that's from the minute he walked in here to the Steelers organization to the time he left, and I've always had a great relationship with him. And I think ultimately his departure from Pittsburgh led to it was because there was no more guaranteed money on his contract. If there were guaranteed money or they offered him kind of a reworked his deal, he would still be in Pittsburgh. But whenever he's going through those double teams or commanding the double teams from the defense and Juju Smith-Schuster is now benefiting off of that, he's like, okay, the move had to be made. And obviously he worked his way out of Pittsburgh. And of course, there were a lot of talk out of Pittsburgh that they weren't trading him to the Patriots and in no AFC North team, even though the Patriots were giving up a first rounder for him. So I think ultimately the way that he maneuvered his way to New England, everybody in Pittsburgh is saying, well, why didn't you just take the first round pick anyway? You would have got it. And he ended up there. It's just unfortunate. And I think when he got to Oakland, I can't speak for what he went through. I don't watch Hard Knocks, so I didn't pay attention to that at all. It's just a very unfortunate situation, and hopefully everything works out for him.
Is he talked about much anymore since it's now been a while since he left Pittsburgh, and even the way that he left Oakland is no longer sort of, you know, part of the conversation in and around really just about anywhere except legal circles. Has Pittsburgh actually truly gotten past him, or is he always going to be sort of that open sore that never really heals?
Yeah, I think that would be it. I think you hit it right there. And I think this is something because, you know, when he was in Pittsburgh, as great as him and Ben Roethlisberger has been, they didn't go to a Super Bowl. And those are the expectations around here in Pittsburgh. And when that doesn't happen, you know, of course you now look at and say, okay, we need to move on in a different direction. But I felt it was really important for Ben to kind of come out, have a really good season, prove that he can now do a lot of those things over the years that he did with Antonio with Juju. And that didn't necessarily unfold the way, especially early on, or 0-2, Ben's out now with an injury. So I think that story, we won't see that ending of it, at least this year. So I just think, you know, when you look back the way that Antonio left, you know, I was the one that he was talking to on the sideline in week 17 when they were playing the Bengals, and just trying to understand where he was at that point. And, you know, at that point, I can kind of sense that, you know, this is beyond repair. I think this is probably the end, and ultimately it did.
So Mason Rudolph, let's circle back to someone who's actually going to play for the Steelers on Sunday. We have now seen a total of 19 NFL passing attempts. You have probably seen a lot more of him behind the scenes. So what kind of quarterback is this guy? What should we expect?
Yeah, I don't think the offense is going to change much because him and Ben Roethlisberger are similar quarterbacks. This is a guy who is a young guy, even though he didn't play a lot last year. He's a second-year guy, spent a lot of time on our practice squad against the defense, preparing on the scout team last year and just trying to craft his own. And this is a guy that is, you know, when you look at where he is, he's a perfectionist, and he wants everything to kind of go the way that he's going to go. Showed a lot of promise in preseason. He was battling Joshua Dobbs that was here, and they were battling for the backup job, and that was the open competition. And Mason really just took the next step, and he just took the job away from Josh Dobbs, especially in that fourth preseason game, the emotions that he showed. He knew he won that job, and ultimately that led to Josh Dobbs getting traded to Jacksonville. I'm sure in hindsight, if Kevin Colbert, the general manager, knew what was going to happen this week, he would have never got rid of Dobbs. But now here they are in a situation where you have, you know, basically two practice squad guys backing up Mason Rudolph. But to see where he is, the way that he stepped into the game, it didn't get too big. The moment wasn't too big for him. And I'm excited to see what's in store for him because this is the opportunity for him to now start his career. It's obviously it's not the way that he would hope it, but here he is leading the charge and trying to get this Steelers team out of that 0-2 hole.
How good is TJ Watt?
He's solid. I mean, it's like a spitting image of his brother. And so I think when you look back to see, you know, what this guy is doing, double-digit sacks last year, and he's trying to kind of pick that back up. but he has a great counter move. This is a guy who loves to get after the quarterback. And, you know, with him paired with Bud Dupree on the other side, you know, these guys are a really good combination, even though the stats don't favor Bud Dupree, but those two work in really good tandem.
Charlie Batch, 12 years in the NFL. You know, you've probably seen so much that nothing really surprises you. We like to pretend nothing surprises us, but I was really surprised to see James Conner step into a career and basically do an unbelievable impression of Le'Veon Bell when Le'Veon Bell was sold as the most dynamic, hardest to replace running back in all of football. James Conner did so without batting an eye. Did that surprise you?
Absolutely. And I just wanted to, it was 15 years, not 12 years.
Let's get it right. I'm sorry, 15.
It's all good. It's all good. But I think when you know, one thing with James Conner, he really did a nice job of studying Le'Veon Bell, because Le'Veon wasn't here his whole first year, but yet he's watching film of Le'Veon in this offense. Le'Veon wasn't here to teach him, but yet showed up during the season, and that's where Conner had to now learn from him. His first year was cut short by injury. Last year, everyone thought that Le'Veon was going to come back. Didn't, and that's when Conner really flourished. Had over 900 yards. He made the Pro Bowl, but missed part of the end of the season. So he was trying to get back and be that featured back. But like you said, he is a spitting image of Le'Veon Bell, but he's not Le'Veon Bell. You know, when I say all of that, he's, you know, kind of a notch under, but he's working his way to get to that point. And if he gets open, you know, if he creates those mismatches in the passing game, he's able to catch the football. That's what I love about him.
Charlie, we're about to let you run. Thanks so much for joining us. One bigger overall NFL question. What do you think of the way pass interference has been weaponized by replay?
Man, this is tough. I mean, obviously this is not what they envisioned when they put the rule in. And now you have coaches challenging plays that's not even part of it, and it's just like, really, is this where we're going with it? But I'm sure those conversations happened whenever they were talking about it in the offseason, and right now the coaches are probably trying to prove that this was a wrong move, and it's just going to continue to throw the flag, and this is what you're seeing. Pete Carroll made it a challenge during the game that really impacted that game because it put Seattle up and closed the game out for them. This is something that we'll continue to talk about each and every week. It's just like holding to me. You can call holding on every single play. Do you open up that Pandora's box? We're going to continue to see all of these things happen. And here we are, what, 14 weeks away from the regular season ending? We'll be talking about this every single week.
Charlie, great conversation. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, fellas.
Charlie Batch here on 95.7 The Game. By the way, I'm not telling that the internet knows more about his career than he does. He says 15 years.
I'll tell you what happened here.
I have 12 years here on the internet. Pro Football Reference says 12 years, because, and that's what I was looking at.
Because if a quarterback doesn't take a snap in the regular season, there's no stats for that year. So my guess
that
is
happened in 2004.
He had a few seasons where he didn't take a snap, and they just didn't pop up on his stats on Pro Football Reference.
There you go. That's exactly what it is. Well, but that's only one, so it's 2004.
But he might have either at the beginning.
2008 is completely nowhere to be found, so there's two.
And maybe beginning or end of his career, he could have been on the bench for a full season as well.
Right. It might have been either 97 or 2013. So 15 years, take nothing away from him. Charlie Batch, good stuff. I was surprised. I really was. I was surprised that James Conner instantly became Le'Veon Bell overnight.
Well, but the Steelers, and this is sort of one of their organizational biases, is they can make running backs, and they know how to find good ones. They know how to develop plays for them, and they use them a lot. And because there have only been three coaches since 1969, that becomes an organizational staple that you just don't get around.
I don't know if we've graduated Kyle Shanahan to this is an organizational staple of anything, but when it comes to getting production out of running backs, Kyle Shanahan's standing in line. Is he not?
Absolutely,
well,
he is.
But some of the years when he was an offensive coordinator, his teams did not run the ball very much or very well. But that might be very well about talent. And the fact that they're running the ball well now might also be about talent, because they don't have a lot of targets to throw to, and they have guys that they think they can get open. I mean, that they can open holes for.
The question was asked Kyle straight up. Have you got a good football team?
Yeah, I think our team has been feeling that since OTAs. If you don't, you're in trouble. You go into every season believing you're good. But it has been different this year than the last couple of years because guys, I mean, they can see the guys next to them. And we have some better players, and the guys who have been here have gotten better. And guys could feel that early on in OTAs, which gives you some confidence. But that's to me what was so important about that win versus Tampa. You want to believe it. You think it's true, but you got to find ways to win some of those ugly ones. And they carried into the next week, and that game went as good as any game as I've been a part of. And that only gives confidence, but it doesn't make anything easier. Things only get harder, and we're going to have a huge matchup this week.
Big matchup this week. By the way, Eric Armstead was talking about how much he needs that place full and loud.
Oh, man, it's the most important, you know, just the energy in the stadium. You know, nobody wants to, you know, play football in front of nobody. So having those fans there, having it loud, having the energy in the stadium, it ignites us as a team. And especially, you know, playing defensive line my entire life, the noise of the crowd has an impact on the game. And when we get out there on third down and the crowd is loud and the quarterback and O-line can't communicate and it's tough on them, that helps us do our job. So definitely excited to get out there and, you know, get this home opener started and, you know, see how excited our fans are.
Third down, pregame atmosphere. These things do matter. They really do, I think, to teams. The Terrell Owens halftime retirement ceremony, is that happening during the season opener as well?
Or the, what is it, Ring of Honor? Or Niner
His name,
Hall
I think,
fame.
Is going up in the Ring of Honor. Hopefully that'll keep people in their seats for a little halftime ceremony. There were halftime ceremonies that were virtually unwatched. So many people just would go to the concourse or
Who cares,
walk
though,
away.
Right?
Well, and one of them was for Dwight Clark. It was a little
okay.
Little
well, that's longer. A bummer. But also, don't do it at halftime then.
Well, when do you want to do it? On Thursday?
Yeah, you can between the first and second quarter.
But you're not going to. You're going to have a ceremony. It's going to be 10 to 15 minutes.
Pre-game?
Pre-game, you still have the same problem of people getting to their seats late.
Guys warming up. Post-game, people leave.
Yeah,
So I think Thursday's probably your best go.
Yeah, that'd be good.
A Browns fan who had Odell Beckham Jr. sign an autograph on his arm has now tattooed said autograph to his arm permanently.
I got to say respect, because if you're going to do something dumb, like have someone sign your arm, yeah, make it permanent. To me, this guy is better than people who just have someone sign their arm and then wash it off, because what was that for?
Why not just ask, you know, hit him a football?
That would be the best option, but if you're going to have him sign your arm, make it permanent.
Yeah, I don't think he asked for a football, and Odell Beckham said, no, I will only sign your arm.
No, clearly this guy wanted his arm signed.
Yeah, because he wanted to ink up.
It's not, it's not like bands who are like breasts and round objects only is all I'll sign.
Was that Jerry Maguire? Sorry, kid, I only sign top super upper deck cards or whatever. It's Brent Barry, right? Am I the only one who remembers this?
I don't know.
I think it's Jerry Maguire. Brent Barry's sitting there, and he refuses to sign a kid's card because he's only supposed to sign the specific brand of card. Forget it.
Well, see, I'm off movies now anyway because I just saw that. Well, no, I'm off all movies from now till the end of time.
Albie just told me that he had Tim Lincecum autograph his passport.
That's right. I was at a Mariners-Giants game in Seattle a few years back, and I had nothing, and I asked Timmy if he could autograph my passport because that's all I had.
You still have it?
Yeah, it's on my passport, back page.
Quick question.
Sure.
Why'd you have your passport?
It was like 5 years ago. I don't remember. I think I didn't have my ID. I may have lost it, misplaced my wallet or something like that. So I traveled with the passport.
Nothing says I can't find my wallet like going out drinking with a passport.
Yep.
925 texter points out, it's not a real signature unless OBJ did the tattoo.
True.
Yeah. That is the one. That's the one weakness of this plan.
I think at some point, and I've reached that point in my life, and I used to not be at this point where I would be willing to wear another man's jersey, but now I'm just not willing to do that. What's going to be the point where this young man who had the autograph tattooed on his arm going to be uncomfortable with another man's name tattooed on his body?
Yeah, it's a little weird. It's a little weird.
Are you a tattoo guy? Any tattoos?
I have a couple theoretical tattoos, but no actual tattoos.
But you have
no tattoos.
So you are definitively a no-tattoo guy.
I'm a guy without tattoos, but literally over the last year, I've been planning a tattoo or two that I intend to get.
You might.
Yeah. I intend to. Whether that is followed through, we'll see.
Would you like to share with us what you intend on tattooing?
It's a bit of a downer. It's probably not the time for
okay,
it.
Okay.
I want to hear it then.
It's a tribute tattoo?
Yeah.
A tribute tattoo?
Yep.
All right. Ray, tattoo-free? You seem like a tattoo-free kind of guy.
I've had pens leak.
Fair enough.
That's pretty much it.
I draw on myself with a pen almost every day. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but I have a bad habit of poking the pen between two fingers, and I leave the studio almost every day with dots all over my fingers.
It's like you've been fingerprinted.
Yeah, it looks like that, yeah.
Probably because he has been. He's just trying to hide it.
It's been years since I was fingerprinted.
Have you ever been fingerprinted?
Not in the last decade.
Ray?
Everybody's been fingerprinted. You have a passport?
Have you ever been fingerprinted because you screwed up?
Oh, no.
Good for you.
I'm pure as newly driven Tibetan snow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a misanthrope, but that's not illegal.
Pure is the word I think of when I think of Ray Ratto.
Totally. Pure something or other. I would normally avoid a headline like this unless it were attached to such a reputable news source that made me think, okay, if Newsweek is talking about bull semen explosions, we can talk about it too. Are you ready? Elena, first thumbs
ready.
Up in the room. Matt and Ray want nothing to do with this. Elena, she hears bull semen explosion.
No, I mean, I was ready.
Full lean in. A huge fire at a cattle breeding facility in Australia caused thousands of dollars in damage, and at least 100 cylinders containing bull semen were destroyed after some of them, I guess, bubbled over, boiled over, and they turned into the way of projectiles.
What?
Vials of bull semen launched as projectiles to the firefighters who are fighting the semen explosion after a blaze hit a bull artificial insemination factory.
This reminds me of an important scene in film history. In the movie Kingpin, when Woody Harrelson walks up with a bucket, and he's like, I got up early this morning, took the liberty of milking your cow. He says, we don't have a cow, we have a bull.
Cryogenic cylinders exploding with bull semen.
Yikes.
And you think you got a lousy job, Ray Ratto?
God, 6 seconds, 5, 4.
Thank you, Albie.
Three,
thank you, Ray. Thank you, Dave two. Fleming. Thank you, Matt. Thank you very much to everyone who called in for the name game. Thank you to Charlie Batch. Thank you to Mike McGlinchey. Thank you to Bull Semen. Thank you to Newsweek. Thank you to all of you for tuning in. I doubt you'll be back tomorrow, but we'll be, and we'll talk to you then. Sports don't build character, they reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.